This is Dr. Kim, licensed clinical psychologist and host of Love to Heal. Today, we have an extremely special guest that is going to satisfy every question you have when it comes to breakup recovery. And her name is Karen McMahon. She's a certified relationship and divorce coach, and she's also the founder of Journey Beyond Deep Divorce. We're so happy to have you today.
Hi, Kim. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So you're a wealth of knowledge. And I know that, you know, the following really takes well to breakup recovery material. And a lot of people are hurting right now that are listening to this. So I really want to see what we can extract from you for them and see if we can kind of be a beacon of help for them during this painful time. But first, I wanted to see how you became a relationship coach.
Yeah, I went through a 3.5-year high conflict divorce. And prior to that, I was selling commercial printing, which was a dying industry to begin with. And then after what ended up being both a hellacious 3 years and a transformational journey, I found myself on the other side of it saying there has to be something more purposeful for me to do with my life. I couldn't have gone through such a huge change within myself to be selling ink on paper. So I started looking around, and when I found coaching, which is all about transition, helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, having been a teenager when my parents divorced and then having my own divorce, I thought this is the transition. This is a super difficult and overwhelming transition, as is, you know, just transitions of breakups, but even more so when there's a whole family involved. And so that's how I got into it. And that was in 2010. And it's just been such a gift to meet so many people, to basically take what I've learned and pay it forward. And yeah, it's been great.
It's incredible. And I know, I feel that a lot of times you see movies or TV shows, I feel like breakups, divorce can be clinically underrated. It's almost treated as if it's a joke at times. People don't understand how long the pain can last and how much it's affecting every area of your functioning. They're trying to hide the pain. Yeah. What do you see there as far as, do you feel it's underrated as well? Have you noticed that more people need help than people are aware of?
You know, I think that there's still like a taboo around it. I think there's still a lot of shame around it. And so that will keep people from speaking up or asking for help, or even, it's such an isolating time, even reaching out to folks who can support them. So, you know, the divorce rate is somewhere around 50% for first marriages, and it goes up to the lower 60 for second, and it goes up to 70 for third marriages. And you would think, well, three times a charm, you might get it right. But I think what we see is people tend to break up and divorce and believe that they're leaving the problem behind. And I think that's the mistake, because If I went through my 3.5-year hellacious divorce and the whole time I was just focused on what his problem was, I wouldn't have gone through the growth that I went through. And so if you're going to feel pain anyway, why not use it to fuel personal development? And so I think that helps to take away, like for people we've worked with and the listeners that we talk to, they feel less shame about it because they're really focusing on themselves through it. They're not seeing themselves with like a scarlet letter written on them or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Transitioning to what you call the monkey brain. I think that this could resonate with a lot of people, whether or not they're going through a breakup, but how do you define the monkey brain, and what are some ways to remedy it?
Yeah. You know, we talk so much about what happens between our ears. And so many of us, when we, whatever the crisis or tribulation we face is, we believe that our pain is caused by something external, the person or the circumstance. And while they play a role, most of our suffering happens because between our ears, because of the way we think about it. And so One example is the why. Well, okay, so let's say your guy went and started texting a lot, a friend that he works with, a female friend, and like that's the fact, and you can confront that fact, and then when you go into the why did he do that? And since I don't know, I'm going to fill in the story. Oh, he never loved me. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, how does that feel? So it's just a story. And what we do is we say, well, there's a lot of stories in our head. Whenever we don't know, we grab a story. And that story is usually from a fear place. It's not a positive story. It's a negative story. It's a nightmare. And so if you're the editor of your story, why not be more conscious about what you're choosing? And if you're all hung up on why not just put it aside and focus on the what? Regardless of why someone did something, what you know is we say there's fact and there's fiction. Mm-hmm. So he went out on a date with someone, or she took money out of the bank, or whatever the case is, that's what happened. When you get into, and they did it because of these reasons, and they wanted to hurt me in this way, and that's where the suffering gets crazy. And so when you just stick with the facts, these are the things that happened. What do I want to do about it? Or what can I do about it? How does it impact me? How am I feeling about it? That's where the treasure is. And the monkey mind just wants to take you down every future nightmare that probably doesn't even exist. And so we're traumatized thinking about these horrible things that are going to happen, especially in divorce, because you don't know what's around the corner. It's like, those things aren't going to happen. That's just your fear voice talking. And getting that under control is not easy. It's like we're all walking around like the tail wagging the dog, and our mind is running the show. And that's why meditation is such a big thing. When you can stop and start breathing and pay, just watch it. Just watch your crazy mind. I called mine a wild stallion. It's like running all over the place, wreaking havoc. Mm-hmm. But when I started meditating and I could breathe and come back, and then I could say, well, how true is that? That's when you start getting some, managing it somewhat. And the monkey mind, I think we all take the better part of our lifetime to manage it.
I love that. I love that so much. So many people have ruminations, and I think that, like, there's a lot of guilt and shame that comes with those ruminations. And you're right. There's so many assumptions that come, are people judging me because I have this divorce or I'm going through this breakup. And why did they do such and such? They wanted to hurt me. And a lot of people are well-intended, not malintended. And they're assuming that this pain was inflicted on them on purpose, like you said, and making up these stories. So you're encouraging everyone listening to try to refrain from making up these stories.
Yeah. And especially with divorce, you know, I was just talking to someone brand new, just stepping into it. And I said, you know, you've been unhappy for a while. So you've been grieving the relationship and planning, like, how am I going to take these steps? And then you're going to sit down with your spouse and you're going to say, I've made this decision to end the marriage, to split the kids, to do all these things. They're like deep in grief. And the first thing is denial. And everything that comes after that may look like manipulation and intentionally hurting, but really they're just flailing in their own fear and pain. And it's going to take them a while to get their feet. And some people do it quicker than others. But you can create a story like, oh my God, now he's being manipulative and twisted, and he's going to make this a hard divorce, or she's going to, you know, do all of these things. And it's like, those are the stories again. Just keep to the facts. Just keep to the facts. And I do think, to your point, understanding that there's a lot of pain and grief is a big part of this, and understanding what grief looks like.
Absolutely. I mean, it looks like you have a secret sauce for a 12-step to recover from divorces. What is there any samples you can give us for that? I'm sure that you charge a lot of money to give those secrets, but I wanted to see if there's anything you would say as far as the steps of recovery.
Yeah, so it's not like the Al-Anon 12 steps, although I am from a 12-step program, so that's where the concept came from. We sat down a bunch of years ago and said, when we look at all of these different individuals over the course of years that have been divorcing, what are the typical emotional obstacles that they face. So their practical situations could be completely different. And so the first one was conflict. And whether you're in a garden variety divorce or a high conflict divorce, you're getting divorced. There's disagreement, there's unhappiness, there's going to be conflict. And so step one is about curbing the conflict and how to slow things down and create the pause so that you're responding instead of reacting. And so that the way I like to say it is, oftentimes we're like tossing emotional grenades across the room, shrapnel's flying everywhere, the poor kids are getting hit. And so when you can learn how to curb the conflict, you can keep everyone emotionally safe. So that's one example. That's the first one because everybody needs it. It's a really big one. We have two that talk about the monkey mind. One is calm the chaos in your mind, and the other one is really to look at and challenge the stories that you tell. And all of these things cause suffering. We have one on how often, especially going through divorce, clients can be so problem oriented. Even after they've articulated the problem and they're clear on it, you start talking about the solution and they're back in the problem. And it's like, why does that happen? And what happens when we keep focusing on the problem over and over again? It's very emotionally draining. We become triggered, we become ineffective. And so the 12 steps is really taking you through all of these different practices, which, by the way, whether you're getting divorced, losing your job, dealing with a loved one with a health problem or anything else, every one of these steps is going to build a robust toolbox and a resilience in individuals to be able to navigate any challenge. And so it's a really powerful program. And there's a group coaching aspect to it. So there's some live support as well.
Incredible. I know that sometimes I have to, I'd like to refer clients, therapy clients to CODA, to 12-step for codependency to recover from that. What are your thoughts on codependency? And I wonder if you could maybe define that for the audience and talk a little bit about what your thoughts are on how that plays out and some of the remedies for it.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times, like energy attracts like energy. So and I'm a recovering codependent, a recovering people pleaser, a recovering perfectionist. I got a lot of recovery.
Correct.
But what happens is their codependence is an unhealthy caretaking. So it's, you know, for those of you who are listening, it's like if you have a heart of service and you like to take care of your friends and take care of your family, that's not a bad thing. If it's coming from a place of, let's say, concern, compassion, and service, then it's really healthy. It's like, you might even say, you know what, I'm going to give up my Saturday plans and I'm going to help you move because I care about you and I want to do that. There's nothing codependent about that. However, if you were giving up your Saturday plans because you were afraid if you didn't do X, Y, and Z for someone that they wouldn't like you or they'd get mad at you or they might think less of you, that's codependence. Codependence is energetically much lower. So it's more like from this fear place. And so for those of us who are codependent, you might say yes when you'd like to say no. You might smile when you want to cry. You might feel envious of your partner's friends and that person spending time with them. Like there are all of these things that codependency is based on a fear of not being loved, an insecurity about being loved. In fact, I had interviewed a fellow, Ross Rosenberg, who's really popular on YouTube, and he recoined it as self-love deficiency disorder. Mm. And so at the core of codependence, again, it looks like caretaking, but it's very anxious, grabbing, and even you can feel the martyr afterward because it's really at its core, you're behaving from a need to be loved, a fear of not being loved, if that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. And I want, go, please.
Yeah. And then, well, so if that's me, what do I do about it?
All right.
Right? And so, because I think that in so many of my clients who are in these high conflict divorces, they're attracted to individuals like, so alcoholics, addicts, people with personality disorders, they're just such a magnet to those people. And so you're this giver. It's almost like you have this big, strong giving muscle and this itty bitty receiving muscle. And so this person comes along, goes, "You're my person. Come and give to me. And I don't got anything to give to you. And so we're going to be great yes. together."
And what kind of feeling can you tap into, like the feeling that you're getting? Is that you're depleted? Like what's starting to feel in like your gut and your mind and your emotions when you're dealing with someone that, and you're still codependent that way?
Yeah. You know, a lot of times people say, "Karen, you know, I gave the relationship like not 100%, 200%, 300%. And so, you know, the follow-up question is, and what percentage did you get back? 10%, 25%. And so it's like, so let's look at that. Why would you continue to give and give and give when there were barely, like there were stale crumbs on the floor being given back to you? And, you know, and you have to look at this with such gentle kindness and compassion for yourself, because if you're like, "Oh, I'm such a freaking idiot," well, now you're just pushing yourself further down emotionally. And the truth is, we didn't lick it off the grass. It came from our family of origin or someone who was very, you know, present in our childhood. And so I've had people who learned it because a parent died or got terribly sick and they had to act like the grown-up. I grew up in an alcoholic household. You might be growing up with personality disorders. You might have to, I've had people who it's like, I had to take care of my mom. And so at a very young age, you just develop the coping mechanisms and it's good. It helps you survive. And then you become an adult and you bring those same coping mechanisms into a relationship and they're not healthy. And so really looking at yourself and saying, "What do I do and why do I do it?" I have a questionnaire on my website, Journey Beyond Divorce. It's called "Am I a Codependent?" It's 25 questions. And like everything, it's a spectrum. So I was probably fairly high up, but you'll have people who are like, "Yeah, I had a couple of yeses in there." And it's like, okay, well, keep an eye on that.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. And I want to just mention, just if you really resonate with this right now, that there are resources that are free, like going to Karen's website. And can you give me that website again?
It's Journey Beyond Divorce.
Journey Beyond Divorce. So we've got that. There's also meetings like Codependent Anonymous. That's for some. Some people enjoy it, some people don't. So you have to see. You could try it out if you want. And then there is a book called Codependent No More. And that one is usually highly recommended as well. So before we move on to another topic, I wanted them to have that.
Yes. Okay. And I second all of those things. The Codependent No More is actually an incredibly valuable book to pick up and read. You'll resonate with it if you think that you need it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for those gems. And then let's talk up a little bit about powerlessness, if you don't mind. Tell us a little about what that looks like maybe. And how do people figure out how to get through that kind of feeling?
You know, it's interesting when we feel powerless, if we stop and look at, well, what are we trying to have power over? What are we trying to control? Mm-hmm. So when you go through divorce, it's pretty easy to feel powerless because you can't control your ex. You can't control the courts. Like there's so much that's outside. You can't control the pace. You can't really protect your kids. You can try your best, but there's just so much that's just not, you don't have agency over. And then you're scared and there's a lot of uncertainty. So you feel completely out of control. So out of control equals feeling powerless. And yet, one of my favorite sayings is every upset is a setup. Mm. And so if every time you're triggered, you see it as a setup to not go outside of you and blame, but go inside and say, well, what's the trigger? Why am I upset? How upset am I? When have I been upset like this before? What do I know about myself? Oh my God, I have a disrespect button. Oh, look at that. I have an impatience button. I have an insecurity that someone just poked at. And so when we are in difficult situations that are out of our control and we keep using it to just work on ourselves, we have 100% agency there. It's so wild. And so as I watch hundreds, maybe thousands of people navigating divorce, so scared and so out of control, and then going, I'm communicating better. I feel more confident. I'm calmer. I'm clearer. I'm more effective. Wow. I'm a better mom. I'm a better worker. They start feeling so good about themselves. And that's really the antidote to powerlessness, is to use every upset as a setup and to just keep looking at yourself with compassion and just taking itty bitty baby steps to heal what's wounded, to refine what character defects you have, and to just keep the focus on yourself. When the focus is on your partner, the guy or gal on the other side of the street, you've got nothing. You're going to feel powerless, and you're going to tell them what they should do and when they should do it or why it's best for them. And it's just, yeah, you're going to feel powerless. You have no place being across the street on that side of the street.
So we need to have an internal locus of control. We need to be able to feel like we have intrinsic strength. So that's coming from within. And does that mean we need to fill up our identity, or what do you think that means to get stronger to combat powerlessness?
I think part of it is finding yourself, or refinding yourself, as the case may be. And so a lot of times there is a loss of self, especially in toxic relationships, right? You're thinking his or her thoughts, you're feeling his or her feelings, you're there on the top of your list. And so part of it is finding yourself. And for me, I literally had to get to the point where something would happen and I'd be like, oh my God, he's going to see it this way. And then it was like, well, wait a second. Let me at least figure out what I think here. Like, what is my perspective and what are my emotions around this? And I call it renting space in your head. And so if your current partner is renting space in your head, there's not going to be a lot of confidence. And that identity does come back when you start rooting into who am I? What do I think? What are my values? That's a great one. Mm-hmm. To really find your top five values that are your North Star for almost any big decision you have to make. And that's going to begin to build self-confidence and melt away the self-doubt that comes from having someone else in your head.
Absolutely. I love that so much. There's another topic that you are really good at, and that is distinguishing between the male experience of a breakup and the female experience. What are the differences, and does that mean that there should be a different roadmap? How do they process and experience the breakup differently?
Well, I think that there's a lot more similarities than differences is where I'll start. So we work with probably about 30-35% of the clients we work with are men. And so one of the things that we find is when it comes to communicating, and especially if you have a guy who's got a career where he's, you know, he's a negotiator, he's in the boardroom and he's got a certain way. When he comes home to negotiate and is negotiating the terms of the breakup or divorce, he could present like a real bully or manipulative. And so when we work with our male clients, one of the things we do is help them look at their way of communicating. And are you thinking that your partner is being reactive or manipulative when actually the way you're speaking is shutting down communication or warping communication? And so that's one thing. And then the other thing is, you know, certainly with divorce, women afraid that they're going to lose time with the kids, and the men are afraid that they're going to lose time with the kids, and women are afraid that they're going to walk away with not enough money. And it's not that black and white. I work with plenty of high earning women, but overall, I think that the fears are different. So the fears are different. The way they handle the fears are very different. And when it comes to men, really do well with coaching. They like coaching because they're not sitting there talking about their feelings like they might be with a therapist. They're right. talking about their thoughts, and they're coming with an action plan, and they have mm-hmm. things to do.
Right.
So that's incredibly helpful. And as much as women love that, I find that men are like, okay,
yeah,
we're at the action plan, like game mm-hmm. on.
Yeah. And women that are solution focused eat it up. I love that.
Yeah. 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 And so I think that the bigger part is the nuance of how an individual, and like I said, men with their communication. But I think overall, fear is rampant on both sides. Grief shows up in all different types of ways. And a lot of my clients will say, could you do a matchmaking thing on the side? Because you seem to talk about all these like really good guys. And I'm like, yeah, the men who actually come for coaching are pretty awesome men. They're like, I want to figure out what I did wrong. I want to be a better person. I want to be able to have healthy love. Like they're great guys. Yeah. And so there's not that many differences in that way, that the men come in as willing and as introspective as the women.
Love that so much. Is there anything that you would point someone in a certain direction as far as healing if they're going through a breakup and they're in a lot of pain? Is there like a short kind of roadmap just to start, like a starter kit of what you would tell them to access at this point, or what you would tell them to start thinking about?
Yeah, I think that the first thing I would say is if you haven't lost anyone or you don't really understand grief, it would be very valuable to do some research, because it's a death. It's a death of a relationship. And back to the beginning of our conversation, society doesn't really honor it's like in our society, it's like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, go out with the girls and guys and get laid or whatever it is. And so this is a heartbreak. My 26-year-old just ended a 4-year relationship, which at 26 is a lot. And he was just absolutely slayed and devastated. And he fell into depression, and it was enormously difficult. And so understanding the grieving process and honoring the time and space that you need is so incredibly helpful. And I would truly encourage people to not run out and fill that emptiness and fill that loneliness with the same person, because you're going to go out and you're going to find the same person that you just broke up with in a different body, and you're going to rinse and repeat until you slow it down enough to learn what was going on in this relationship. And when you end a relationship, it's kind of like, oh no, it was perfect. He was perfect. Everything was great. And it's like, you need to take off the rose colored glasses, and what attracted me, and, you know, what did I bring to the table, and what did he or she bring to the table, and really unpack it. And it's a great time to reconnect with your interests, with your, you know, your girlfriends, and kind of get to know yourself, so that when you do go back out, you're a stronger, more confident version of yourself, and you've learned something. I mean, that's the whole idea. My daughter had a big breakup last year, and I said to her, you know, if you think about it, life is just this series of lessons that we learn, and relationships are really there to heal and grow us in intimacy, right? So you have intimacy in your family of origin. I don't know about you, but I've met very few people who didn't have some dysfunction in their family of origin, right? And so it's like, so we learn ways of being that are really good. And then we learn ways of being that they're not so good, you know? And so this is a way, this period of time in heartbreak is, it's nice if you can take a pause and really grow through that. That would be my suggestion.
I love that so much. Yeah, there are so many gifts that people aren't going to realize until later, till you get through some of this pain, and they're going to see so many gifts that come away with it and after it. And that's what we get to see and witness as coaches in this field. So we're very lucky, but it's hard to see that there's going to be gifts on the other side of that pain. But you have been an incredible gift to everyone listening. I'm so grateful that you came on today. You're so warm and you have so many gifts of knowledge. And I'm really, really happy that you came on to share everything with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So one more time, where can they find you? Where can they access all of your resources?
So Journey Beyond Divorce, we have a podcast. It's the website. There's like 400 articles. And we're on all of the social media platforms, Journey Beyond Divorce. If you're listening and you could really use some support immediately, we do offer a rapid relief call. And that is a coaching call with one of the coaches on my team, and you'll walk away with clarity and perspective and an action plan. So feel free to go to rapidreliefcall.com and grab your best date.
Karen McMahon, thank you so much for coming on, and I hope you have a beautiful evening. Thank you again.
Kim, thank you.